Hey buddy, what's going on?
Not a lot, man. We are on our third of our rack and stacks today, and man, I gotta tell you, it has been hard getting this guest on. We've had a couple of missteps, and now we finally get to have him and talk about his book.
I know, and he's a return, which is really cool.
Absolutely,
because you know, and we joke about it, but Brian is one of those that I think we should be clear. We've talked, we joke about this. You get two ways to come back, right? You either screw up so bad the first time, we need to give you a second chance, or you're so good, and Brian definitely falls into that category.
He does. Just an absolute great guy, and like you said, a return guest of the show. And I'll tell you what, instead of jawing about it, how about we just bring him on?
You think? What do you think? Yeah, let's do that, because you and I could talk about stuff.
We could, and we do.
But, yeah, we do, and we will more. But let's talk to Brian now, and you and I'll talk later.
All right.
See ya.
Welcome to Building Wins Live with host, the hybrid road warrior himself, Randy Chafee, and producer-director Wes Wyatt.
Whether we're talking about sales, marketing, tech, or industry news, we want to bring you the best tips, tricks, and info to build wins.
Now, let's get to the show.
There he is, from the cold, wintry refines of West Virginia, Brian Sexton.
Randy Chafee, what's going on? How you doing?
Just living the dream, man. Loving what I do and doing what I love, you know? That's it.
Yours or somebody else's dream? That's
the... You know, it's my dream because I learned, you know, that's a great question because I mean, that's a whole subject for a whole conversation, right? But I think we all, since you brought it up so well, what a segue. It's almost like you've done this before, like hosted a show of your own. And I mean, it's almost like you're an author and a podcaster or something. I don't know. But
yeah, I've done that a few times. That's what I tell people when they say to me, I'm just living a dream. I'm like, yours or somebody else's.
Yep. So, and I think it's a great question because years ago, I would have had to said, if I was honest, we all probably at one point are living somebody else's dream of what they want for us or expect or what we think somebody else wants. I feel pretty blessed that I'm living my own dream. That doesn't mean every second of every day is the way I want it always, but the whole package is pretty okay.
Well, it's not going to be. And here's the thing, Randy, it's, you know, I tell people, and I've said this before to folks and they're like, well, what's a big dream that you have to do? And I'm like, I don't really dream anymore. And it's because I feel like that if I want to go do something, I just go do it. Or I go, okay, maybe it's not the right time, or maybe it's not the right way to do it. But I don't really have dreams that it's like, well, I dream. Maybe the one dream that I have, if I could turn, who is the song I'm thinking, Cher's 30 years ago sang a song, If I Could Turn Back Time.
Oh, yeah.
If I could turn back time, I would love to throw an inning for my beloved Cincinnati Reds out of the bullpen. I would love to close a game out. But, Randy, I don't think my right shoulder, I'd have to have my right shoulder rebuilt. And so at 52 years old, it's just, now I could maybe try to learn to throw a knuckleball.
Hey, there you go.
You know, I could be a knuckler, but you know, I that's really the only. I'll say this. I take that back. If I got the opportunity to call a Cincinnati Bengals game, I'm a big Bengals fan. You see behind me.
Yep.
If I got an opportunity to call a Bengals game, I would just absolutely lose my mind. And I have great respect for the guy that does it. A guy named Dan Hort. I've met Dan. Great guy. But that's the one dream. If I had a dream per se, that would be the one is to call a Bengals game.
Wow, that'd be
do play by play on the radio. Yeah,
there you go.
It would kind of be like 1st and 10, ball resting on the 45. Bengals line up in a single eye formation, leading 7-0 over the Las Vegas Raiders, something like that.
You know? Yeah. See, if you ever get that, bring me into the gig because see, I don't want to do play by play. I would like to be the color guy. I would like to go ahead and meet a couple of players, get a couple of stories.
Yeah.
Say, Brian, you know, I was just with, pick a name, right? And you know, he was talking about how his wife started this thing, and you know that I like I would love to do that background thing. That would be fun.
Yeah, you know, and that's the thing too, Randy. It's a ball game. I grew up listening to guys on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up listening to, you know, growing up in Southern Ohio. I grew up listening to Marty Brenneman, the Hall of Fame voice of the Cincinnati Reds. Gotten to meet Marty several times. That was a pretty cool thing. And there's always a rhythm and a cadence to somebody when they're a great play-by-play guy. The caller guy. And I've done caller for high school sports. You jump in there when the play-by-play guy is done. I've done play-by-play as well. But you're right, the insight that these guys bring to a broadcast, you know, like for the Bengals, Dave Lapham, who played offensive line in Cincinnati in the mid-70s and into the 80s, he's been their guy forever. And as a Bengals fan, you can't think of anybody else you'd rather have as that collar guy than Dave Lapham. For years on the radio with the Reds, it was Joe Nuxall, the youngest guy to ever participate in a Major League Baseball game. It was Joe Nuxall that did that. You know, I was listening. I was thinking about you a couple weeks ago. I was watching a clip with Mark Harmon, and I know you're a big Michigan guy.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, Mark Harmon's dad, Tom Harmon, was a Heisman Trophy winner at Michigan in the early 40s. And then Tom Harmon made a name for himself nationally as a broadcaster in the 60s with the LA Rams and doing college football. And they asked him about his dad, and he said, look, I just wanted to go hang out at the stadium.
Sure.
I just wanted to go hang out with my dad. And, you know, they asked him, you know, did you realize your dad was all this? And he said, yeah, but I just wanted to go shag balls in the, you know, I just wanted to go field some punts or just shag balls or something. And I guess every one of us, Randy, here's where I'm getting with this. I guess every one of us flashes back to that little boy.
Mm-hmm.
The first time you go to the ballpark with your dad, you were on my podcast talking about the impact of your dad a few years ago. You know, my dad was the same way. And, you know, it's going to the ballpark with my dad or watching the Bengals on Sundays with my dad back in the 80s. And those are the kind of memories that I have fondly. And so that's kind of what takes you and propels you into adulthood. And hopefully you get to make those same memories with your own kids.
Exactly. You know, speaking of that, I was just thinking when you said that, I remember the old Tiger Stadium at the corner of Michigan and Trumbull.
Yeah.
And downtown Detroit, old stadium. And I still remember the first time I went there, my dad and my Uncle Floyd, we called him Pop Warner because his name was Warner, his Uncle Floyd Warner. But, and I still remember going to the stadium, the excitement. I think this would have been, they won in 68 World Series. So this has been probably 67. I was like maybe 10, 11 years old. I don't know, something like that. And I still remember walking up the stadium, which was cool, in the big city, right? We're from a little farm community 100 miles away. So it's the first time I'd been to the big city, right?
Yeah.
Walked into the stadium, which was cool on its own. But in Tiger Stadium, when you walked in and we got seats down to the lower level, not right on the field, but low. Walking up that, the ramp, I guess I'd call it. And all of a sudden, there's the field, as green as you could ever possibly get. And there's all these players that you've watched on TV. And it's like, it was incredible. I've been to I'm a big Michigan fan. I've been to a million Michigan football games. Love my Michigan football.
Yeah.
Nothing is better or more in my mind. And part of it's because I was there with my dad. Right. And that was a cool thing, but it was, and the exciting part was, I think he was as excited as I was, you know, yeah. I mean, it was pretty cool.
I'm going to shock you. Okay. I'm going to shock you here. So on that 68 Tigers team, you would have had Willie Horton.
Yep.
First baseman. You would have had Bill Freehand behind the plate.
Yep.
You would have had guys like Norm Cash, Al Kaline, Gates Brown.
Yes, sir.
You would have Mickey Lolich, left-hander. You'd have, obviously, that was the year that Denny McClain won 31 games.
Yep. Jim Northrop. So,
yeah, Jim Northrop. I'm kind of a baseball historian, and I love the history of the game. So those teams, you know, you catch those names from back in the day. And then, of course, you know, the 71 All-Star game where Reggie Jackson hits the light tower in field off of Doc Ellis. And had that light tower not been there, that ball probably lands in the street somewhere.
Oh, absolutely.
In downtown Detroit. But, you know, and then you flash forward. The team I remember vividly is the 84 team that because Sparky Anderson, who had managed the Reds, was managing the Tigers. So they, you know, you had, obviously you had Kirk Gibson, you had Alan Trammell, Lou Whitaker.
Yep.
You know, guys like that, Lance Parrish. I liked Lance Parrish.
Mm-hmm. He was cool. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Jack Morris, Jack Morris threw a no hitter that early in that year against the White Sox. And that was what propelled them. I mean, Detroit won. They were like 35-5 their first 40 games, and nobody was beating them the whole year. And
right.
They just had an incredible team. Willie Hernandez in the back end of that bullpen.
Oh, man. Yeah. Willie was awesome.
The MVP in 84 and the Cy Young Award winner.
Yep.
That screwball that nobody could hit. I mean, that's the Tigers team that I remember, Randy, is those guys.
Yeah, I remember those well, too, because I was obviously a little older then. But, you know, as a historian of baseball, as you are, it's funny how we got on that subject. But so I can still, and it won't bore everybody with it now, but I can still name the whole starting lineup by position of the 68 Tigers. I mean,
I don't know who the shortstop, the second baseman, and the third baseman.
Norm Cash at first, Dick McAuliffe at second, Ray Oyler at short. Don Wirt at third. Okay. You had Willie Horton, and then you had in left, you had Al Kaline in right, and then you either had Jim Northrup usually in center, or we had this other guy, the name escapes me right now, but we had another guy that would play some center. And then, of course, Bill Freehan behind the plate. And then you had Mickey and Denny as the two big stud starters, right? Man, that was just what a great year. And again, since we're on this subject, it's fun. Years after baseball, remember when Lolich won, he beat Gibson against St. Louis?
Yeah.
Won three games in the World Series. After he retired, little town I grew up in, Carson City, middle of the state, we had this Frontiers Day, a little festival. They still have it, I think. And one of the things, I was kind of on this committee in charge, and we decided to have a little baseball clinic. And I don't even remember how we got to this, but we decided we wanted to have somebody like Mickey Lolich. And so back in the day, it wasn't as high end as it would be today. It was like, we got something from his agent. And he said, well, could you bring the paperwork down? Mickey will sign it, and then he'll just show up. So I went down to Lake Orion, which is a little town north of Detroit. And Mickey had a Mickey Lolich donuts. It was a little drive-through donut shop. Mm-hmm. And so I'm excited because I'm going to go meet Mickey Lolich, right? And I go into the front counter, and I said, yeah, I'm here to see Mickey about – and he said, oh, yeah, he's around back fixing the drive-through, where you talk your order, right, the little screen – and not screen, but the little mic, right? He said, just go ahead and go back. So I walk back, and literally there's Mickey with a shirt untucked, blue jeans on, tools out, fixing the speaker, you know, where you drive up to place your order if you want to go pick up.
Yeah.
And he just jumped up, wipes his hands off, shake hands. And he goes, yeah, I'm Mickey. And I'm thinking to myself, yeah, I know who you are. Right. I just watched you pitch in the World Series a couple of years ago, or three or whatever it was, you know, a little more than that, maybe 10, that was probably 10 years later, but it was like 15 years later, but it's like, wow. You know, what was so cool about it was watching him as a kid at Tiger Stadium, watching him on TV winning three games in the World Series, and I'm standing there shaking hands with him and talking about him coming to do this baseball clinic, just like another guy, you know? I mean, he was about as unpretentious as you would get, you know? It's just a great memory, though.
And you know, here's the thing, too, is that, you know, baseball does that, you know, it's very odd. A story you mentioned Norm Cash. I got to share this, and we'll get on to other things. But I remember hearing a story about Norm Cash. 1973, the California Angels are playing the Tigers in Detroit, and Nolan Ryan's got a no-hitter.
Mm-hmm.
The great Nolan Ryan, in my mind, the greatest pitcher of all time. And Norm Cash goes down to the clubhouse and takes a saw or something, finds something, and gets a table leg off of one of the tables, a wooden table leg, and walks up to the plate with it. And the umpire goes, "You can't hit like with that thing." And Cash is like, "Nobody's hitting this guy tonight. Doesn't matter if I've got a bat or a table leg. Nobody's hitting Nolan Ryan tonight." And he was right. I mean, you know, that's the thing that I remember hearing about Norm Cash.
And that's funny.
He was probably like, "Hey, nobody's getting a hit off this guy, so why not try to swing with a table leg?
Oh, yeah, I'm going to strike out anyway, so it don't matter."
Exactly. And Nolan Ryan struck him out to end the game. That was the thing.
Yeah. Well, Storm and Norman, man. I remember, and then we will jump on, but I remember when Al Kaline signed his first contract for $100,000.
Yeah, that was a big deal then.
He was amazed, and he made the statement, I can't believe I'm getting paid this kind of money. He said, I for a game, I'd play for free. He said, I'm just, you know, it's just, and you think of somebody as high level of players he was at the time. And I mean, that's just where we've come from there to here, right? Now they make $100,000 in like 2.5 seconds, right? So,
well, yeah, exactly. And Randy, that's a great segue for us to go into some different areas. You know, here's the thing about it. Guys like Norm Cash and guys like that, everybody talks now about guys and the money that they make. You know, Juan Soto just signed a 15-year, $765 million contract with the New York Mets. And you hear guys say, well, I would play the game for free until it comes time to do a contract, and then they want paid. But truly, the guys that we grew up watching, we just lost Pete Rose. I grew up a huge Pete Rose fan, living 3 hours from Cincinnati.
Right.
You know, my goodness, what would Pete Rose be worth in today's game? What would Johnny Bench be worth in today's game? What would Tony Perez and Joe Morgan and those guys be worth in today's game? Great, great players. But let's put it into perspective. Those guys were great when the money was not.
Right.
And they will still be all-timers. And so here's the thing that I would say to folks out there listening to us. Be great when the money's not.
Ah, there you go.
Because when that time comes for you, you know, Johnny Bench, for the rest of his life, Johnny Bench was inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame in 1989, 35 years ago, Randy.
Wow.
Johnny Bench can take Hall of Famer to his grave.
Yes.
So the money that Johnny Bench didn't make in his playing career, he's had an opportunity to make some of that back as a Hall of Famer. That's something nobody will ever take away from you.
Right.
Be great when the money's not there so that you can stay great when the money does get there, or if the money gets there, and it may never get there. Just be great. And those guys in that era, Al Kaline, great, will always be an all-timer because he's forever immortalized in Cooperstown.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Love it. That was a great point. That was a great point. So let's talk about, you know, before we get to, I want to finish up our show today with talking about your book for a while. But before we get to that, I know that having had you on before and having had the pleasure of being on your podcast, the importance of your growing up and with your dad, and that's one of the great things that you and I have been connected by is that importance. Give us a little bit of the Brian Sexton story.
Oh man, well, your viewers and if you're not watching on YouTube or Facebook, behind me over my right shoulder, you'll see a picture of my dad. That was taken the year before he passed away in Alaska. He and my mom, he was pastoring a church at the time, and the church for their 40th wedding anniversary got him a trip to Alaska. They got him an Alaskan cruise. And so when I redid my office here, my wife said, I'm going to put this picture up. And it's important to me because it reminds me of how far I've come Mm-hmm. You know, the things that, that my dad did, it reminds me of the importance of legacy. And so, you know, for me, the story of my life has been having somebody that was always an encourager for me in my corner. My dad always believed I can do anything. In fact, I'll share a story with you. 13 years ago, Randy, so it's December of 2011. I'm sitting at home. I was working a job where I worked nights. I would go out selling at night, recruiting high school kids to a college for culinary arts and other disciplines. And so I was sitting at home on a Friday, and my dad calls me. And I thought he was just trying to firm up plans for the next day. My dad always wanted to get with us on Saturday, my sisters and I and our kids. And so he calls me and he said, "Son, I need help." And I thought, this is odd. I'm usually the one asking you for help. Here I am, 39 years old, and my dad goes, "I need help." And he goes, "So I'm trying to pastor a church. I'm trying to work a part of a nine-state territory." You know, my dad had parts of nine states that he covered at the time. And he said, "I need help." And he said, "I've already talked to my boss. And would you be interested in working with me?" And I said, "Man, I don't know." And this, that, and the other things that come into your mind. Mm-hmm. I just didn't want to kind of wreck that relationship that my dad and I had. He wasn't my pastor at the time, but I thought, but the more I thought about it, Randy, I thought, man, this could really be a cool thing. This could really be a good thing. And so, you know, my dad said something. He relayed a conversation he had with his boss, and he said, his boss told him, he said, "You've got two problems. You need somebody willing to travel and it's good with people." And my dad said, "Well, that's my Brian." And when he said that to me, something inside of me just clicked. My Brian. My dad had always, I'd always been his son, and I'd never heard him talk about me like that.
Wow.
And so a couple months went by, we put the deal together, and for the last 10 months of his life, my dad and I worked together. The first 3 months that I worked for the family company that we were a part of, we were together almost every day, riding around parts of Virginia, North Carolina, Kentucky, Indiana, you name it. And it was the best. I've told people to this day, it's the best job I've ever had. Because I got to spend 3 months every day with my dad just talking about life and sports and kids and all this stuff, all these conversations that I didn't realize at the time were not going to happen a year later.
Right.
Because he wasn't going to be there. And so if part of my story is having somebody like my dad that pushed me, but encouraged me.
Mm-hmm.
And the last 10 years or so of my life has been all about building a legacy and honoring my dad, but trying to take it to the next level. You know, your show is called Building Wins. I would say for me, my last 10 years have been building a legacy.
Love it. Love it. That's good stuff. And I always love those dad stories because, you know, I'm finishing up my book right now, my first book, because Wes and I got a couple things in the works coming up real shortly right after that, but some projects we're working on too together. Yeah. But it end up not going too far into that, but I can tell you that wherever that second, third, fourth page in, after all the other garbly goop, is going to be a picture of my dad with him and I on the little Ford tractor.
Yeah.
Because that tells the whole story. And well, I was just a little guy.
Well, let me ask you something. I know this is your podcast, but I want to ask you a question for a minute. What's been the V8 moment for you writing this book? Because, and for those of you not old enough to understand, back in the 70s, V8 juice was the commercial that person smacked themselves on the head and said,
yep,
I could have had a V8. Randy, what was that V8 moment for you or has been that aha moment or that V8 moment in this process for you?
Of writing the book, you mean?
Yeah.
Probably recognizing. I haven't thought of it that way, but you know, you caused me to think, which is good. Recognizing something that I took for granted for a lot of years, which was my dad was there and was always there. And though I think one of the things we have in common too is that I was 39 when I lost him, and which is generally speaking at a young age. Now, a lot of people unfortunately lose them at before they're born, right? Or there. So it's not like I'm playing the violins here over it. But it was a time that I recognized that you have to, because of him, you have to take every moment and everybody that you deal with and remember that you may not get tomorrow. Because I went for a lot of years, and probably even though we got along great and he was an incredible inspiration, I probably didn't always make that phone call back when he called. I was too busy. Yeah. I don't know what dad wants. I'll call tomorrow. And it didn't work that way exactly, which is good. But all of a sudden, there was no tomorrow, right? Yeah. And so I think as I thought and wrote the book, everything that I talk about in the first half, and I want to talk about your book, but the first half was all about the stuff I learned from him and the things that I would not be anywhere near, if I'm good at anything, I wouldn't be near as good at anything I'm good at if it wouldn't have been for the upbringing that I had.
And forgive me for jumping in, but here's why I asked that. I don't think people realize that when you go back and you do that retrospective thinking, and I did it with people, buy from people, and a little bit I did it with intentional encouragement. When you do that retrospective thinking, Randy, you don't realize just how deep the impact really was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the moment, you know, you're in the moment, you and both of us, you know, even into our late 30s, I think to some degree we're still trying to impress our dads. We're still trying to be worthy. I'll tell you a good story. If I haven't told this one, I will tell this, if you don't mind.
No, go ahead, please.
The day before my dad died was a Wednesday. Okay. My dad and I would see customers on different months. And so we were up near the Canton Akron area up in Ohio. You know that area well. Wes knows that area well. We were up in that area, and that can be a tough area to sell in, especially if you're not dialed into the people up there. They're very tough-nosed, blue-collar. And so we were in the auto electrical rebuilding business. So in other words, the customers we called on rebuilt heavy-duty starters and alternators for the heavy equipment and truck and bus and you name it, all these bigger pieces of equipment. Some automotive, but not like the heavy stuff. Okay. So we're calling on this customer. I'm calling on him the month before, and it's a father son, like my dad.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm connecting with the son who had just finished his MBA program. I think he went to the University of Akron and finished his MBA program. And the year before I had gotten my MBA. And so we were just connecting and talking about, hey man, this was tough for me. This was tough. We were connected. My phone, I get back out to the van. I've got 6 missed phone calls from my dad. And I finally call him back and he goes, where have you been? I said, I've been in this customer. For an hour? Yeah, dad, for an hour. What in the world were you talking to them for an hour? I said, I was connecting with Eric. You're connecting with that guy. He was connected to Eric's dad, Danny. I was connecting with Eric.
Right.
I said, yeah, we were connecting over our degrees, things like that. So, Randy, it's the next month. It's the day before my dad passes away. He's in that same account. He's in there for an hour talking to him. And I'm lighting him up. I'm like, where you been? Where you been, man? I'm trying to call you.
Yeah.
And he goes, I've been listening to a love fest about you. And he just goes, man, he said, I don't know what you did to that guy. He said, but he loves you.
Mm.
And my dad was not one. You had to catch him in the right moment for him to just gush out praise toward you. You know, my dad always felt like keeping me humble. I try to do that to my 24-year-old. And I'm like, I got to pass this down. I got to keep you humble. My mom told me after he died, she said, this was later that weekend, Randy, she said, your dad was really proud of you.
Wow.
that moment right there sealed that. And so it was divine, Randy. It was a God, you know, people say, oh, it's a God thing. Okay. For me, I had no idea that 24 hours later, I'd be in Boone, North Carolina, scrambling to get some breakfast to try to get home because my world just got rocked in about 800,000 pieces.
Right.
But it was that phone call 24 hours previously with my dad, him sharing that with me, you know, and my dad was like, man, they want to do more business with us. They want to, they, you know, you may, in other words, my dad was saying to me, Randy, what he was saying to me was, you made an impact there.
Right.
Now they're flipping the script going, how can we do more business with these guys?
Exactly.
Because they model and mirror what we're doing. And so, again, forgive me for jumping off there and sharing that story. But that's part of the Brian Sexton story, is the great impact of Jerry Sexton in my life. And I look like my dad. Listen, the reason I wear contact lenses and a beard is because for all those years, everybody kept saying, you look like your dad. And I used to make fun of my dad because he would take his glasses off to read. And now I do the same thing. And here's the thing. Now I got to put them on to be able to see the computer screen so I can talk to you.
Oh, that's funny. That's good stuff. No, thank you for sharing that story. That's amazing. So, and I think it's a, you do this book, Intentional Encouragement. I love,
You mean this one right here?
That one right there. Yes.
Yeah, this one right here on my desk.
That one. Yeah. That's it. Let's talk about it. Tell us about the book.
Well, I appreciate Wes putting the graphic up there for everybody to see it and popping that email address up there. So, you know, Randy, this has been a couple of years in the making. I did people buy from people. And in 2020, okay, and you are way more disciplined than I was writing the first book. I took like 3 or 4 years to write the first book. And finally in 2020, I'm like, it's now or never. And so by the end of the year, I had it published. The second book, I was kind of on that same process, but I felt a little more sense of urgency. And I tell you how I arrived at that, Randy. When I started really being active on LinkedIn in about 2019, I looked around and saw a ton of expertise, but very little encouragement. And I'm like, I can do that. I can take care of that. Because here's the thing that people don't understand about encouragement, Randy, and expertise. Okay. You have a lot of people, and I sold for years on expertise. In fact, I'll never forget, my sales manager was with me one day years ago. I was selling food. I was probably in my late 20s. And we go to this country club account, and my sales manager's with me, and the lady that runs the kitchen, she goes, "We love Brian." She said, "I just got to tell you, we love Brian." She's like, every idea he gives us is a hit. And I'm like, well, look at me. I weigh 340 pounds. I've consumed a lot of my own product. So, you know, hopefully that worked out. But the thing with expertise is nothing without encouragement. You know why that is? Is because when the mind is not open to receiving expertise, it just goes here. And it just stops.
Right.
You see, encouragement is a window. It's like an open window. You see, if you're in a situation and you don't feel like there's any way out, I can't tell you anything that's going to help you because your mind's closed. There's no way out.
Right.
You couldn't receive the expertise even if I laid the answer right there out in front of you because your mind's closed.
Right.
And so what encouragement does is it opens the mind to receive the expertise. And so how it does it is it's through stimulation, edification, and promotion. That's how we open our mind. And when the mind's encouraged, the heart's encouraged. When the heart's encouraged, the spirit's encouraged. Hmm. You see, you're not just made up of this. You're made up of this, this, and your spirit. Because when you die, your body lays there in the casket. There's no personality there. There's no life there.
Right.
There's nothing there that makes you, makes me, me. And so again, we've got to have encouragement. And Randy, have you seen the world today?
Mm.
Have you seen the shape of things?
It's pretty tough.
I think we're in a pretty timely season for encouragement right now.
I agree.
And so again, that's the whole impetus of getting this book out there and just trying to open up some thought around a concept that nobody really talks about, but everybody needs it.
Yeah, I love it. I love you wrote the book, and I think it's a great time to talk about it because you're right. You don't think about it until it's brought up, but and what you just talked about, you can lay it right in front of you, and you're right. If you're not open for it, you're not going to accept it. And even if it makes sense, you're not going to accept it.
Well, how many customers have you called on over the years? You knew you had the right solution for them. It was laying there right in front of them. And for whatever reason, maybe fear kept them from buying. Mm-hmm. Maybe it was a lack of urgency that kept them from buying. Maybe it was an excuse that they put in their mind. My goodness, Randy, if you and I had a nickel for every time we heard your price is too high, we'd probably own Facebook.
Exactly.
You know, and so that's the thing is people just don't understand what encouragement will do to everything around them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you think about it we all suffer from that, right? We all get, even if you're intentionally encouraged like you are, it's a easy place to get into, fall into that trap of I'm always done what I always did. I'm just not interested.
Yeah.
We throw up these excuses and back to what you just said, I think I laugh a little when you say it because we're all taught, I think it's a subconscious thing that kids are taught early to always say the price is too high. That's like the ultimate number one, right? I think because it's the only thing they can come up with because the point is I'm afraid to change or I'm afraid to listen to what you have. I'm afraid. So I'll just use your price is too high.
That's the first broken Chinese I ever learned called on Chinese restaurants was too high. That's the first piece of broken Chinese English that I ever heard was too high. But Randy, here's the thing, okay? Let's talk about customers for a minute. You're the perfect guy to dive into this. And this is why I was so excited to get to be with you and Wes today and talk about it. You're the perfect guy to talk about this with. Customers today are so bombarded with information. Remember in the good old days when you and I were the information?
Exactly.
Remember the good old days when we would talk about something or a customer would call us and say, hey, what do you think about this? I'm leaning this way. What do you think about it? What you know, give me some information. Now customers are so bombarded with information that a lot of times they're running their business by paralysis by analysis.
Right.
And so, you know, customers are, the reason customers don't take a great sense of urgency is they don't want to make a mistake because there's so much. And now with the pressures of having a social media presence and having this presence and having that presence, they don't want to look foolish in front of their customers by making a bad buying decision.
Right.
I remember years ago, I was selling food to a guy, an established restaurant in a town about 50 miles away. And this guy had, they sold footlong hot dogs. And they changed the footlong hot dog. He got a better deal on it, was getting some rebate money back on it. They changed the hot dog. And him and his wife ran the business. And I was like, man, I miss that footlong order on my order every week. Those 20, 25 cases of footlongs. Well, mm-hmm. about 40 or 50 cases between his two stores. And you know what happened to him, Randy? His wife fielded so many complaints that the hot dogs tasted different.
Mm.
She went to him and she said, I don't care what the price is. You get on the phone with Brian. You get those footlongs back. You get those wieners back today. I fielded my last complaint on these wieners, and he immediately changed back to us, and his customers were used to it. Okay, that was 22 years ago or longer. Yeah, it was longer than that, almost 25 years ago. But Randy, there's nothing new under the sun, but now it's heightened because customers are so afraid of making a mistake or being thought of as foolish and not running their business that it's paralysis by analysis.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, I think you're 100% right. And that just will continue to compound with all the virtual and the social media and all the things that happens out there. That's just going to compound that and acerbate that even more, right? So as sales pros, yeah, we got to figure out how to get around that, get back to that, because it's real easy. You know, the one of the dreaded words in the sales, from a salesperson standpoint, is that dreaded T word, right? Transaction. Everything getting turned into a transaction, because we never win in a transaction. Let's face it.
That's right.
That's what we have to guard even more today, is because I think consumers, the good news and the bad news, with all the internet and social media, they're more exposed to products. What we have, like you said, used to be we'd bring all the information in.
Yep.
We better assume when we walk in, they know every bit as much about it as we do probably already.
Oh, yeah. Oh, 100%. Right? And I want to go here for a second, because you're the perfect guy to go here with. Okay. I remember you and I talking during, we were talking during the pandemic. It might have been on my podcast that we were talking about this. You had to remake yourself because the way you had always sold was not conducive. You couldn't get on an airplane. You had to really reinvent yourself. But I want to talk for a minute about social selling. I hear and I see this buzzword all the time about social selling. And I think to myself, you're still missing it. You've got a lot of people out there that are social selling gurus. Some of them are friends of mine, but I'm going to say it. You're still missing it. Connection with a customer is not smashing a button. Mm-mm. Connection with a customer is not smashing that like or smashing that this or that. You've got to have something that touches them in a way and connects them to you and your product in a way that causes them to gravitate like a magnet to what you have,
right,
and to what you do and who you are. Because we've taken social selling and we go, well, I'm connected to this person on this platform, but we've never had a conversation, and then you slide into my DM and try to sell me something. We've not had a conversation. How do you know what I need, want, and like by running algorithms on me?
Right.
That doesn't connect with me as a buyer, and it sure didn't connect with me as a salesperson. I think we've got to understand with social selling, we've got to keep the connecting part in mind. People buy connection before they ever make a transaction.
Absolutely.
They did 30 years ago when I got into sales. They'll do it now in 2024. It's the connection part, but we've lost that, because connection to most people is, well, I hit this button and so we're connected.
Right.
No, that's not it at all. Let me encourage you, get to know people, then sell.
Absolutely.
Then sell.
Absolutely. That is probably one of the biggest mistakes that I would tell any young salesperson getting involved, and young in the sales game, whether they're coming in at a later age or a younger age, but young as in chronologically amount of time they've got into the sales world, is quit selling, and that sounds 100%. Odd, but quit selling. Quit selling. I don't sell anybody to anything. It's a kind of a Zig Ziglarism a little bit, maybe in different words, But I do help a whole lot of people get what they want or need, right?
And that's the greatest quote. That's ever, one of the greatest quotes ever. I've heard.
Exactly.
You can have everything in life you want if you'll simply help enough people get what they want.
Exactly. And so, but you don't get that without getting to know the people, without getting to know their wants and needs, and without them having a trust with you that you're going to guide them the right way. Because we, as salespeople, I said the dreaded word is transaction. And if we don't negotiate these waters correctly, the customer will make it all transaction, which then we lose. But see, salespeople do the same thing to customers. We make it a transaction. All I want from you, Brian, is your money.
Well, we forget how to buy. We don't sell like we buy, Randy.
Exactly.
We don't, we think, okay, well, my sales training taught me this and I got to do this and that. And it's like, wait a minute, think about how you buy.
Exactly.
And sell that way. Because 9 times out of 10, you're going to run into somebody that, is looking to buy the same. They're looking to buy the same way. You know, that's why Zig said, It's because, you know, Zig understood that, just helping people. See, that's the thing. If, you know, there's no term for help person, you know, right. We got to be a salesperson because,
right.
But, or you go into a department store. We used to go into department stores years ago and somebody would say, can I help you? Right. No, I'm just looking.
Yeah.
But when you need help, you want that person to be right there. Right. And so we've lost the ability as salespeople a lot of times to remember how we buy, and we don't sell that way.
I think that's an incredible, I think that's a great point, Brian, because, you know, I've always said and I always believe that nobody wants to be sold, but everybody likes to buy.
Everybody loves to buy.
We love to buy stuff. We're Americans. We love to buy stuff. Give me anything out there, I'm going to buy it if I feel like I want it or need it or just feel like I want to have it, right? But I get turned off the second you try to sell me on it.
See, that's why I wanted to come on this podcast, because you turn on the sales brain in me. You turn on that sales brain, and it's like, but again, Randy, it is. Do we give our customers here's a concept that I want to throw out here to, and you got a lot of salespeople that watch your podcast. Mm-hmm. Here's a challenge I want to throw out to salespeople. When's the last time you encouraged your customer? So in other words, when's the last time that you stimulated their belief about their own business?
Exactly.
When's the last time that you edified them? When's the last time that you said, you know what? What I believe about you and the way you run your business is this. And then when's the last time you promoted them and said, you know what? You're the reason that I get to walk in the door. You know, you run your business so well. And when's the last time, salesperson, you told your customer what you believe positively about them?
Exactly.
Hey, Mr. Customer, I believe you're a great business person because of this. Hey, I believe you've got a great business because of this. I believe you take care of your customers this way because of this. When's the last time we as salespeople encouraged our customers intentionally so that we didn't make it all about the sale or building rapport, but we took it in another direction and said, here's what I believe about you.
Right.
Honestly, truthfully, and respectfully.
No, I think that's a great point. And I think along that line, we forget to find out from the customer what it is. I guess here's how I want to say this. If you ask the questions, and we talk about this a lot, but if you ask the questions and you talk a whole lot less and listen a whole lot more and ask the probing questions, customers will always tell you, and I'll use the S word here, but they'll always tell you how to sell them if you just listen to what they want. Because we should, the long term, if we want to be sales pros and we want to be in it for the long term and we want to be successful, we need to sell, help the customer get what they need and what's best for them at this time, not what we want to sell them.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't matter what I want to sell you, Brian. What matters long term. Oh, I may make the sale and then I get a commission off of selling you today, but I haven't developed a repeat business. I haven't develop the relationship that'll get referrals, that'll get repeat business 10 years from now by just selling you what I want to sell you. But if I help you get what it is you need, regardless of whether it's what I need to sell you today or not, long term, we're going to be way better. I'm going to be better. You're going to be better. And then we're going to be partners. Then we're going to be partners, right? And if we're partners, not customer seller, right?
Yeah. Well, and I want to deviate just a little bit there. I like this type of question better. Instead of a probing question, I like an inspiring question. When I did the Intentional Encourager podcast, I wanted to ask questions. The goal of every podcast to me was to ask a question where somebody goes, I hadn't thought about that. Mm-hmm. I've never told this story before. I hadn't really considered that. I want to inspire thought that either they've had deep in their brain somewhere, or they were like, man, I've been waiting for somebody to ask me this. I've been waiting for an opportunity to release this. That's when you see a customer really, in my sales experience, that's when I've had the most unlocking conversations.
Exactly.
Was when a customer was like, man, I've always wanted to tell this story, or I've always wanted to do this, or I've always wanted to do that. And you inspire thought in that customer that says, you know, nobody's ever asked me that.
Yes.
Nobody. I look for when I watch people being interviewed, I'm waiting for that interviewer to ask that question that somebody goes, man, nobody's ever asked me that, or asking it a different way. Mm-hmm. I get so frustrated. I'll watch the press conferences. I watch the Bengals press conferences every week. They'll talk to Zach Taylor, the head coach, or Joe Burrow. They'll talk to Ja'Marr Chase. The questions are repetitive.
Right.
Well, what did they show you on defense? Well, you saw the same game I did.
Right.
I want to know from them, hey, Joe, take me through pregame. What was the two or three things that you were thinking coming into this game during the pregame that you thought, if we do these two things, we're going to be successful tonight? Hey, Joe, tell me about this offensive lineman that nobody really talks about. What do you value most in that person as a teammate? I want to hear questions like that.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think those are the questions that invoke the best answers, because everybody asks the same questions.
Right.
And Randy, what I admire about you is I believe when you get in front of a customer, you like asking those inspiring questions, because you're a conversationalist at heart and you're a connector at heart. You really want to take the conversation into a different realm so that customer feels freer to open up to you and share with you what they're thinking in that moment, instead of giving you a coach speak answer, you know?
Well, exactly. And you're 100% right. You don't get it's all about that relationship. And if you ask the question and you inspire and you are intentional with using your terms with the questions you ask, you're going to develop that the R word that we all want, which is the relationship. And,
yep.
And once we get there, you, not only do we get more business than we'll ever get if it's a transactional relationship, but you'll get the referral. You'll get those things like, yeah, your competitor was in the other day, man, they got some pretty good numbers. You say, oh yeah, what are you going to do? Oh, nothing. I still buy from you, but I was just letting you know, right? That's the place you want to get to, but you don't get that. If it's transactional, you'd have just found out you lost the business, mm-hmm. right? That's the difference is you build, but see, it comes back to, and then I do want to ask you one last thing, and I want to be cognizant of your time too. But
no, I'm good. I'm enjoying this. I'm loving this.
Well, this is the second one I've done today that we're going to have you back, because we'll have to have a three-peat. But
yeah,
and actually, what I really wanted to ask you is an SAQ because I do want to get you out of here, and I do have to get out of here too today. But should ask questions, and we kind of, you know. The segue was beautiful right there. What do you wish, whether it's an interviewer or if you're a seller or a buyer, either way, because sellers should ask questions too, or buyers should ask questions too, right? They do all the time. What do you wish about Brian, the salesman, Brian, the writer, Brian, the father, the son, whatever the case is, that you just wish people would ask you that they just never do? What's that one thing you just would love to tell everybody about yourself that we haven't touched on already that you just wish somebody to ask you?
It's a question that I always asked on the Intentional Encourager podcast. If you could go back in time and have coffee with yourself, what would you mm-hmm. tell yourself? Nobody ever asked me that.
Yeah.
You know, but I would be intentional about doing that. I would. And Randy, the responses to that one question, if you could go back 10 years, 20 years, if you could sit and have lunch with yourself 20 years ago. So 52-year-old Brian, if I could sit down and have lunch with 32-year-old Brian, What would I? My wife and I were talking about this one night. We've been married 28 years. We live in the same place. It's not the same home, but it's the same place that we lived in when we first got married. And I said, have you ever thought about if we could take a time machine back and knock on the door in 1996 and knock on Brian and Tanya's door? Do you wonder what we would tell them? And she looked at me and she goes, I wouldn't be kind. And I said, neither would I. I'd put my finger in 24-year-old Brian's chest and say, do you realize who you're married to? Do you realize this woman that you're married to is going to become your best friend, your greatest champion, your biggest encourager? Do you realize she's going to be the mother of your kid? By the way, here's a picture. Here's a kid you're going to have.
Wow.
I wouldn't be kind to me because 24-year-old Brian didn't value things like 52-year-old Brian does.
Yes.
52-year-old Brian understands the value of true relationships. But I wish people would ask me, Randy. I wish people would ask me that question because it stirs up things in me that I would really like to just say, hey, this was where I fell short. This mm-hmm. was where I fell short as a husband. This was where I fell short as a salesperson. We were talking about that last night, my pastor and I. And we said, man, if we could go back 20 years and have a sales class with 32-year-old us, the things that I would have poured into me that would have made me a rock star.
Right.
20 years ago, the things I would have poured, I thought I was pretty good back then. The things I would have poured into me and I would have said, this is going to unlock so much stuff for you. I would have been like Biff Tannen in Back to the Future. When future Biff goes back in time and gives past Biff, the 1950s Biff, the mm-hmm. sports almanac that had all the winners from,
right.
You know, that would have been, I would have said, here's your playbook. Here's the things you're going to need to equip yourself for the next 20 years. I would have probably been way more successful than I have been. I don't know how much different my life would have been.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I would have loved that's the question that I wish more people would ask me. Is the question that I usually ask everybody else.
That's perfect. And I think, you know, the good news is we can't do that. Well, that's the bad news. We can't do that. But the good news is that we can still reflect. We can still go back and take the lessons that we learned, the dumb things we did, and the dumb things we've done along the way, and the good things we've done along the way, and polish the bad ones and promote the good ones. I guess it's an afterthought or an after sight, right? But it's always good to be able to go back and analyze that. And I think that's something we don't do enough, probably. I don't do enough of going back and going, what did I really do dumb at 24? Of course, I'm so old that I don't remember being 24. I think I started at 33.
You remember the 1968 Detroit Tigers. So
that's true. That's true. I do remember them. But anyways, good stuff, my man. So good. We'll do this again one day because I realize we could probably go for about 3 hours and have great discussions. And I love a great sales discussion. You're folks, really buy the book, man. I mean,
You can go to Amazon and get the book, or I Wes has put it up on the screen. They can come to me, and I'll tell you why I don't have a website yet. That's something that's in the works. But if you email me and say, hey, I heard you on Randy Chafee's Building Wins, I can send you Venmo links, PayPal, things like that.
Okay.
I'm trying to what I want to do is physically touch and handle every book. And Randy, what I do is on the inside cover, I'll show you real quick. I not only sign the inside cover right here, I sign it, but I want to put a personal note in there to you. I've got a ton of books over here on the shelf of people that I know and been acquainted with. And I just love that little personal touch. And so I want to give that to somebody else that buys the book. It's $20 signed and shipped from me. You can go on Amazon. I think it's $15.99 on Amazon. I would love the opportunity. It would be a great honor for me to sign your book personally. I'll ship it myself. I'm the guy that goes to the post office. I go and get the envelopes, and I've mailed out books from all kinds of places. But if you're looking for something to give somebody for Christmas or after the holidays, and you want something that will hopefully inspire you, will hopefully make you think, and just hopefully just give you some commonality and go, hey, this, a lady in my church told me, she bought the book and she said, I didn't realize I was doing some of this stuff already.
Wow.
You're going to have V8 moments when you read this mm-hmm. book. It would be my profound honor for you to pick this book up. And, you know, again, I'm not trying to make a mint on this book. I just want to get this concept in as many hands as I can get it in. And thank you, Randy and Wes, for helping me with that.
Love it. Absolutely. Anything you do, my brother, will help you do it. It's you. You're one of a kind, and we appreciate you being on and chatting about this today. It's been a pleasure, my man.
Oh, the pleasure is all mine, Randy, and I can't wait to do it again, man.
You got it. We'll do it again. All right, brother. Thank you much. All right. Cheers. All right, man. That is a great friend and a great guy and a great salesman and just all around great guy. Brian's book, buy Brian's book. Seriously, I've read his other books and very, very good. That's it for today. Wrapping up another good one. Remember, love what you do and do what you love. And, you know, go out every day and live it, love it, own it, because you never know. Just like Brian and I talked about our dads, you never know what tomorrow brings. So make it the best you can today. And just go make today your absolute best ever. Till tomorrow. Cheers.
Listening to Building Wins Live.
You can find information on Randy, Wes, our guests, show notes, and anything related to the podcast at buildingwins.live. On behalf of the whole Building Wins team, don't forget, make today your best day ever. Until tomorrow.